Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to The Kitchen Garden. I am Frances Nesbitt and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey, and we're live today, Friday from 4 to 5, and the show is repeated on Monday at the same time from 4 to 5. We'd love to hear from you today, so if you have any questions or comments about what we'll be talking about during the show, please get in touch by dropping us a text to 086 353 7782, or you can email the show kitchengarden@crkc.ie at any stage during the week. And on the show today, it's a varied show, but it is midsummer, so we have to remember that it's kind of time to relax and enjoy the garden and the good weather while we have it. So there won't be too many jobs to do at the end of the show today in the garden job slot, and we'll be talking to the people from Ballykeefe Distillery here in Kilkenny about maybe some of their drinks that we might enjoy while we're outside in the garden. And we'll also be joined by Claire from the Gas Lamp Gallery in Gorey, County Wexford, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about art and food, or food in art, and maybe the garden in art as well. But in the meantime, Mags, how are you?
I'm good.
How was your week?
Good. Busy week.
Busy week.
Yeah.
I see you have a lovely cake in with you there.
Yes, I do. Raspberries. The raspberries are just starting to appear on my bushes.
Oh, your autumn raspberries as opposed to the summer raspberries, because all my summer raspberries are finished now.
Yeah, these start, they're kind of small at the beginning, so and then by September they're much bigger and stuff and much better, but they've just started in the last couple of days.
Very little gap between the summer and autumn ones this year. They're quite early, aren't they, your autumn ones?
They always kind of start early and stuff, but it's not a full crop or anything like that. It's not even a great crop and stuff. They're small and a little bit sparse, and then in the autumn there's like loads of them, and they're generally quite good. So but that did inspire me actually to check the freezer, and I still had a few in the freezer from last year.
Use them up
first.
So
it's time to use them up. So that's what I put into this cake. I'm also eating courgettes at a rate of about one a day. So I probably won't get through them all, but I'm going to pickle some at the weekend. But I did a nice courgette pasta dish actually the other day with lemon and basil and toasted walnuts.
Oh, it sounds lovely.
It was very nice actually, yeah.
I see on Twitter at the moment there's an awful lot of people looking for ways to use up courgettes, because when they arrive in plenty.
And literally you turn around, you turn back and...
It's a marrow.
Yeah. So
use them while they're small and they're sweet, because when they get really, really big...
I don't like them as marrows.
Very little flavour, lots of water, and it's a bit bitter as well, isn't it?
It is a bit bitter and kind of nearly woody almost in that. So the pigs get them at that stage in my house. But
there comes a time when the pigs get sick of them as well, though.
Well, yeah.
The pigs look for new recipes for marrows.
Yeah. But courgettes, there's still loads to do with courgettes, actually. So pickling anyway is on the cards for this weekend. And then we'll have pickled courgette for the whole winter, which is very nice actually.
It's lovely with sandwiches, lovely with hard cheeses. It's really, really nice. You just need to be careful with your fingers as you're using the old mandolin to thinly slice the courgettes.
Oh, I'm very fancy. I have a food processor with a slicer thing on it. So I just push them down into it and
it does it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I remember last year I was doing... I'd finished the courgettes. It was the chilies, actually. I was pickling the chilies and I was using a mandolin for... Yeah, not all of the jars of chilies were suitable for vegetarians. let's just leave it at that. Courgettes, I remember last year, I brought in the courgette and apple cake. That's a really good recipe.
Yes,
that's up on the Crowan Cottages website. Courgette and apple cake, if you do a search for that, you'll find it on the internet. Really, really nice. So I've shared that a couple of times this week. And baking with courgettes, a lot of people are doing that. I'm seeing lots of recipes for baking with the courgettes.
Yeah, I'm not really into that. I know a lot of people do it and stuff. I don't really. I'd rather keep them savoury, actually. You can do like fritters. You can make kind of courgette and potato cakes. Integrate the courgette, grate your potato. It's quite a bit of work and stuff, but they're really tasty.
Kind of like fish cakes, that kind of consistency.
Kind of, yeah, but they more look like a kind of a rosti type thing. But you need to like grate the courgettes, and then you have to... salt them and stuff and leave them for a while and stuff. So it is, you need to get a lot of the water out of them and stuff. But very tasty, very nice if you do that. Put them in salads, put them in pasta. You could do lasagnas and you can stuff them as well. There's quite lots to do with them.
But use them is the key thing. If you've grown them in the garden, keep using them. And it really is this time of the year now that your crops can tend to get away from you. So the black currants are in heavy abundance out in Crowan now. But
oh, mine are gone.
Oh, wow, I still have so many. I still have so many. But getting to them on time, that's the thing.
Before the birds. They go over.
My secret to growing soft fruit is just grow loads and loads of it. So then the blackbirds can come in and have as many as they want, and there's still plenty for me. But it's getting the time to go out and actually harvest.
Yes.
It's very easy to grow the plants, put in the care and attention on the seedlings, do all of the donkey work around weeding and watering and all of that kind of stuff. And then when it comes time to the harvest, if you miss it, it was all for naught, you know. So if you've got stuff growing in the garden, get out and enjoy it.
Yeah, I've picked my black currants. The birds got loads of them as well, but I've picked what I have. There's nothing left now. They just, when they actually decide to clear them, they literally just come in and bushes are just sitting there.
They always go for the red currants first at my place.
Oh, right.
They love the red currants. Then they move on to the white currants.
Oh, right.
And the black currants are last.
Oh.
And then, but you can tell like what they're eating because they leave evidence of it behind them.
Oh, right.
And the colour of
different
it shows.
Colours.
Exactly. Exactly. But speaking of kind of enjoying the benefits of the garden, it is the very start of August. And before we know it, this month will be over. And that will be the end of summer. So while it's at its absolute peak, people should really take some time and enjoy the kind of bounty that's out there now.
Yeah, and it's not too late to plant more stuff.
Yeah, but enjoy the flowers that are out there now. Enjoy the fruit that's coming through in the garden. I brought in some plums today, the plum trees. Not a great harvest this year because of the weather, but there are some plums available. So enjoy the kind of fruits of the season and spending some time outside while it's nice. And it is very warm.
It's very warm.
Mm. Now, do you want to talk about that cake recipe now, which are gorgeous raspberries?
Yes, my ingredient of this year actually has to be oat flour, which I've used in a couple of cakes that I've brought in actually. And it just seems to make a cake much lighter. It's just literally blitzed up porridge. But so I added that. It's not in the recipe for this cake originally, but I've sort of changed it around and added to this. So we'll see what it's like and stuff. But I think it's a great addition to a cake.
And do you blitz up the porridge oats yourself?
Yeah. I'm actually going to just do a big jar of it so I have it, because I ended up doing it every time for another cake and stuff. But just to have a lot of it on in the jar, so I'm sure it'll last like any flour. But it just makes kind of a lighter consistency of stuff, as porridge would, and anything a little bit healthier than having somewhat wheat flour in it as well. So but this is, so it's raspberry, lemon and coconut tray bake. I quite like tray bakes. They're very handy and you get a lot of eating out of it. And I put flour, 200 grams of butter, 200 grams of sugar, 200 grams of self-raising flour, and 50 grams of the blitzed up porridge and the rind of a lemon into the mixer. Mixed it all up and stuff. And when it kind of came into like a crumbly type, there, I'm just going to pass you in some.
That's a huge slice. Oh, it's still warm, just out of the oven.
Yeah,
it looks absolutely lovely. I'll take a photograph of that and tweet it. It looks lovely.
Then I took 100 grams of it out, which I was going to mix with the coconut before I put the eggs into it. So then added my two eggs into it, mixed it up again until I had... Do I have to smile as well? Mixed it up again until I had kind of a lumpy batter. Poured that into the bottom of the tin. Put your raspberries on top, and then you've got this kind of coconutty crumbly mixture that you're going to put on top of the raspberries. So that's what the top is, and what's in the top then is your coconut, some flour and butter and sugar and everything. So you can...
Oh, it's so tasty,
isn't it? Well, I haven't tasted it yet actually, but
It's really good and so light.
Yeah, and that's the oat flour and stuff, and it's not a lot of oat flour, like for 200 grams of flour or 50 grams of oat flour, but it just seems to make a huge difference. I did it with a blackcurrant cake a couple of weeks ago, and I thought everyone loved it. Everyone just thought it was gorgeous.
Jeez, they're going to kill us. There's crumbs all over the studio here. Crumbs all over the desk. If we suddenly go off air, it's because some crumbs have gotten into the desk here.
Mice have arrived. So yeah, that's my raspberry, and that is actually my own recipe, because I sort of took a recipe and then took it apart and remade it.
Right, well, we'll stick that up with a podcast of the show. So on the thekitchengarden.ie is where you'll get the podcasts of all of the shows, and we'll put up the recipe of that on the notes for today's show. And we'll do that sometime next week after the repeat.
Okie dokie.
Super, that's really, really, really tasty. Plums. Do you have any plums out in your orchard?
Yeah, I was actually looking at them today. They're green, they're not ripe yet, but mine seem to be late. One tree, there's not millions on it, there's a few.
I have three plum varieties growing out at Crowan, and it obviously depend, like they flower at slightly different times. These are Victoria, and they're the only ones, that's the only tree that has any fruit on it.
Oh.
So the others obviously flowered back when there was still heavy frost or the belting rain or were affected by the drought. I'd say more likely it was the frost and the heavy rain that killed them when they were at the flower stage. So the Victoria is the only one, but it's a very consistent kind of plum anyway, but not the most flavoursome of them. But it's probably my favourite tree fruit. I can't walk past the plum tree, regardless of the time of day. When there's a plum on the tree, I'll just pull it down. I might have two or three at a time.
That's gorgeous.
I love them. They are nice.
But they're nice and subtle and nice. Yeah, I think they're really nice. They're, yeah. I don't think I wouldn't do nothing. I wouldn't do anything with those except eat them like that. They're not worth... They're too nice to put them into jam or anything, aren't they?
Unfortunately, they don't last too long, though. That's the thing. They all tend to ripen in and around the same time. They don't keep very well. And if you leave them on the tree, our friend the wasp, at this time of the year now, our friend the wasp is coming to enjoy them as well. And it's around this time of the year that the wasp queen will stop laying her eggs, so she'll stop working on this year's wasps, and she'll grow herself, put down some fat so that she can sustain herself over the winter while she goes and hibernates. And I think I've mentioned on the show before, but the adult wasps feed aphids and small insects to the larvae, and so they're the gardener's friend while they're doing that. But the little larvae secrete this very, very sweet kind of mixture in their poo, and the adults eat that. They love it, so they get a very, very sweet tooth. And when there's no more larvae producing that, that's when they start to go mad for sweet things. So you'll notice from now they'll be ransacking any of the fruit that's left on your trees, so the likes of the plums. And when you're in the beer garden enjoying a cider, that's why they're trying to get into your cider. They're craving sweet things.
And jam and everything.
It's always from around mid-August or the second week in August that they start to have that kind of craving that they
because
just can't satisfy.
You actually barely see wasps until that time, actually. I didn't understand
and
why.
And suddenly you'll hear people complaining about wasps now all the time. It's just they're not getting the good sweet stuff back at base. There's no more larvae there, and they're desperate for some sweet things. So that's what they're at now. Now, you're handing me back a plum here because there's a small little larvae inside it. Is that it?
Yes.
Yeah, we might talk a little bit about those kind of like attacks of the small little insects on your fruit trees later as we're dealing with the garden stuff. But it's no harm. Just not suitable for.
I didn't really want to eat it.
Just not suitable for vegetarians. I'll tell you what that is a little later.
Or even
in the
like
show.
Meat eaters who don't want to eat like live things.
Now, in some food news this week here in Kilkenny, I did notice that Truffles Restaurant, which is on William Street, has just been awarded Just Ask Restaurant of the Month for the month of August. Selected by renowned food writer Georgina Campbell, the Just Ask Restaurant of the Month rewards eateries across Ireland that exhibit best practices in showing transparency in the sourcing of the food on their menus. So the lads down at Truffles Restaurant indicate where all of their food ingredients come from, so all of the suppliers that they use, and where possible they use as many local suppliers as they can. And it's great to see that that's been recognised. And this Georgina Campbell selected the Just Ask Restaurant of the Month, and it goes to Truffles in William Street, so well done to them.
Very good.
Blackberries. Did you do any blackberry picking yet?
Well, I've just eaten a few on the go, really. And they are out a little bit earlier and stuff, and they generally will come out early if there's a heat wave in the summer and stuff. So, but there's a lot of berries that are out early, like Rowan berries are. They look like they're in the autumn.
I saw huge crop of Rowan berries this year as well.
Yeah, I saw spindle berries out actually only in the last couple of weeks. Gilda Rose, their berries are like well on the way and stuff. So everything I think is a little bit earlier, including the blackberries.
I did see in the press during the week that it was getting a lot of coverage that the blackberries are, you know, ready for harvesting now in some parts of the country, and the effects of climate change and all of that kind of stuff was being discussed, and how the heat wave has brought them forward by a few weeks. Because really, blackberries would have been traditionally collected at the end of August and into September.
September is kind of,
and here we are, this is the 3rd of August, like the first weekend in August, and there's already like enough to make a walk along the hedgerow worthwhile.
Yes.
But we might talk about them in a bit more detail in a couple of weeks when they're in full flow, and things that we can do with the blackberry. But just be aware that they are out early, and if you wanted to take a walk along a hedgerow, you could probably
go and have
pick
a nibble.
Some out. Yeah. And the bank holiday is coming up, of course, so there'll be a bit more time to do stuff like that. Now, What we might do is take a break, and then we're going to be joined by the lads from the Ballykeef Distillery here in Kilkenny. We're going to be talking to them a little bit about their range of drinks and the history of the distillery as well. It's a very, very interesting story. So I hope they brought some samples along, actually. I meant to mention it to them. But we'll take an ad break
cake
first.
Cake and whiskey.
Cake and whiskey and gin. We'll take a break first, and then we'll come back with the lads from Ballykeef. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Text us on 086 353 7782. You can email the show, kitchengarden@corkc.ie. And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey. And we're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5, as we are every Friday. And the show is repeated on Mondays from 4 to 5. You can listen on your radio or online at corkc.ie. And I'm delighted now that we're joined by Carmel Nolan from Ballykeef Distillery, who's in to talk about their range of products. Although I have to say, I am a little bit disappointed by the lack of bottles and clinking glasses. You've come from a distillery empty-handed.
We've actually had a very busy afternoon. We've had the Foodie Town Awards judges in. So we've been in with them for the last couple of hours. So it ran over a bit, but make sure everyone votes for it, because it'll be great for Kilkenny.
And you're very good to come in. I know how busy you guys are out there. And Foodie Towns, it is. It's a competition we've shortlisted for many, many times. Ever the bridesmaid, never the bride, though.
I know. We came third last year, and they said that we fell down on our voting.
Oh.
So they think Kilkenny's fantastic. The judges were there, and they're excited to see new products like ourselves, and then see everything else that's going on. We're blessed in Kilkenny with what we have to offer.
I've been amazed that we haven't won it to date, you know, because it is such a foodie town, and we have amazing food producers and so on, and innovative business people like yourselves out in the distillery in Kilkenny. But the public just haven't lodged their votes online.
Yeah, so we have till the end of the month, and everyone just get online and vote, because it comes down to ourselves now. We have the produce, we have everything, which is great, but we'll get there,
and
fingers crossed.
Where can people vote?
You can go online and vote now. I should have it off.
If you do a search for Foodie Towns and Kilkenny, exactly, and you can click your vote there. And what we might do is, actually, we might talk about that next week in a bit more detail, because there is until the end of the month, and we'll talk to somebody from the committee and see how they put that together. Now, back to this. The distillery.
Yes.
Ballykeef Distillery. It's the only distillery in Kilkenny, is it?
Ballykeef Distillery is the only on-farm distillery
right.
in Ireland
wow.
for 200 years. So Morgan Ging is the owner.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people might see us popping up, and I'm only new to Ballykeef myself, but it's a fantastic property. Morgan, he had a dream of a small still, and it grew very large out there. But it's trying to bring back the tradition of Irish whiskey on-farm distillery. So the whiskey's not ready yet. As of yesterday, we're 2 years waiting now, so 2020 for the whiskey, but we've got fantastic products out there as well.
And that is the thing about producing aged whiskey. So the whiskey has to spend some time in oak to be a whiskey, and so you can't just start it today and sell it tomorrow.
Well, the legal requirement is 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ask any one, it's 3 years, one day before you can first bottle your whiskey.
And that would be quite young. Like, some of the whiskies are aged 10, 15.
Well, that's it, exactly. Our whiskey, we're hoping to get a 5-year whiskey out of it. But again, we won't know much until 2020. But we have a few samples. We have a 10-month-old in a bottle out there, and it's looking to be a good whiskey. So fingers crossed we keep going with Morgan's hard work out there.
Yeah, and time, it's amazing. Time is the one ingredient that you can't cheat on with whiskey.
But
in the meantime, while you're doing this distilling, there is a short-term product that you can kind of harvest, isn't there?
The difference is gin takes about 3.5 hours, which is fantastic, and a much smaller still. Look, I'm new out there myself, and I'm learning a lot, which is fantastic.
Mm.
It's, I'd have a tourism background, and what they're doing in the distillery for Kilkenny and tourism is an amazing. There's 800,000 people come for distillery tours in Ireland each year, so that's kind of what drew me out there. But what I'm learning about the drink side of it is amazing. So we've a gin on the market, Ballykeef gin. The gin came third in the world in the San Francisco Awards, and that's kind of a really good one to come third
my
in.
God, there must have been an awful lot of entries in the competition.
Yeah,
like that.
There was something 2,500 gins in it, so it's and they said to us it was we're a very early product to be getting that award, which is fantastic. Our poutine was the same. A lot of people think poutine's illegal. It's not since 97. But our poutine came third. I got a bronze as well. But as of today, I can announce that a poutine actually got a master's in the world.
Oh, wow.
In the Irish whiskey section. So poutine is the unaged whiskey. And it is, yeah, we got a master's yesterday, which is over a gold, which is fantastic. So hopefully you'll see a lot more about that.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, it's very exciting.
God, I'd raise a glass to you now and say, yeah, well done if I had a glass.
I'll tell you, I'll come back next week.
Don't bother coming back, just send in the drink.
I'll have to go today.
I got a taxi in today because I thought I won't be able to drive home after all of this gin that I'm going to be drinking. But no, that's amazing results out there for the lads, isn't it?
It's really exciting. And then we have a vodka on the market as well. But yeah, even like the local places in town just can't get over the products and the movement of it and what's going on. So it's fantastic. Mm. And you know, we're so lucky in Kilkenny with the staff and the local bars and everything. They're very excited for the products, and they're out to us each week and looking at what they can do. And we're very much about working with locals. So the Truffle Fairy, she's fantastic. She has a poutine chocolate made with us. And I suppose one of the big things which a lot of people are asking us about is the whiskey stakes. You may have read about it, but we're 100% sustainable in the distillery. So our byproducts will go out to the cattle on the farm, because we have to remember Morgan's first job was farming, and he's still a full-time farmer, but he farms in the morning and the evenings and distills during the day. But the cattle then will eat the byproducts from the distillery. And this is something we're looking at now, is the Ballykeef whiskey stakes.
Right.
So currently you can get it in the Colonel in town, but a lot of people are looking at taking it on board. We're not ready ourselves with big production of it, but it's exciting what's coming down the line.
We've mentioned here on the show many times that we are essentially what we eat, and so the flavour of an animal, flavour of the meat, is heavily dictated by what it is that animal eats. And so I'm sure there is a very distinctive flavour that comes from the mash. It's the mash that gets fed to the animals.
Well,
out
that's
there.
That's it. I actually just had my first one today because of the
food.
Maria was making it up for us, which is fantastic. And it really is. It's but it's just the working with locals and seeing what people want. Out into this distillery, you'll see. So the tour itself, it's very different from a normal or from a lot of the distillery tours. It's very hands-on. There's always a family member out there. And I think that's why it's after becoming so recognised in the distillery tours.
Before we talk about TripAdvisor, because there's even more good news for Ballykeef, you've mentioned a couple of times now that it's an on-farm distillery. Yeah. Now, what do you mean by that? So it's Ireland's only on-farm distillery.
Yeah, so when you pull into the car park, on one side of the car park is the cattle shed, and then at the other side is the distillery. So the distillery was built on the farm. It's the first on-farm distillery in over 200 years in Ireland. We do our own crops. We grow it ourselves. We cut it. We bring it into the distillery. So we have our malt barley. We're looking at a rye, introducing rye this year as well. It's been a tough year for farmers, but we're quite lucky with what we have there. And so Morgan is always looking at new ideas and new ways of doing it, but very much keeping it to what we're doing on site on the farm, and then bringing that into the distillery.
So you have amazing control over the raw material. So there's essentially two. There's the malted barley, and there's water goes into the early stages of production. It's local water, and the malted barley is grown on site. So can't get much more local than that.
Ballykeef is great for the water with the limestone, and it's a fantastic area for it. So it's great.
Wow. So now, you mentioned the tour, so people can go out and see all of this for themselves.
Yeah, we do two tours a day, every day except Sunday. We give Morgan a day off on a Sunday, or the family. But on 6 days a week at 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. you can come out to do a distillery tour. So the tour starts in the old stables, which is our visitor centre, and it's fantastic. It's part of the desert estate it originally was. And then you'll be brought into the distillery. You could end up you know, stop. What's quite nice about it is very hands-on tour, so you can go through the botanicals and everything there, which what they're putting in the gin that day, or do they have whiskey on, what's going on. But you get brought the whole story, the story of Irish whiskey, which is our main product, but the story of how it was done back in the day as well, which is fantastic. And then you get brought back in and there's plenty of tasters on the way, so I would advise maybe having a designated driver coming out, because you do finish with a full Ballykeef signature gin, and there you get to taste poaching on the way, you taste the vodka, sometimes a few little new things are coming out. Mm-hmm. We have two exciting products coming to the market in September, a slow gin and also a spiced poutine, which is,
oh my god,
I think my favourite at the moment. And
just as well we didn't do an outside broadcast, really, isn't it? Because we might have got to try all of that.
You're going to bring you out,
yes. Now, there was a time when both my great grandparents on either side were maltsters in Dublin,
yes.
So they used to malt the barley.
Yes.
And it wasn't for Guinnesses, but it was for distilleries. And at one time, there were 12 distilleries within a couple of miles of each other in the centre of Dublin. It's incredible.
Yes.
We used a fantastic distilling or whiskey industry here, and then it all went into sad decline, and there was Powers and Jameson, and that seemed to be pretty much that. Really on a resurgence at the moment, though, isn't it?
It really is. It's probably for legal reasons, it became a lot easier to get your license a couple of years ago. So a lot more distilleries popping up around the place. And I just think it's fantastic for not only the drinks industry, but also for tourism within Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
It should, our distillery, we have a lot of people who fly into Ireland, drive down to us, and then now it's trying to get them to stay in Kilkenny, which is great, and push it out that way. But
do you like whiskey, Max?
No.
I just thought I'd ask you that question because I saw you shove a huge piece of cake into your mouth.
A tiny piece of cake.
Sorry about that, Carl.
I do like gin, though.
Yeah. Well, gin is the new thing. A lot of gin is really growing in the market at the moment. And it's
very trendy.
Yeah, it's very trendy. And
I've liked it for years, though. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm not just on the trend.
I never liked gin, so I'll say the opposite. I love whiskey. I never liked gin. And I must admit, I'm going to give Morgan this, I do quite like the Ballykeef gin. And I always used to think the glasses, you know, the big glasses, I said, oh, that just is to look good. But you learn a lot. You learn that the glasses are so big because you're meant to have so much ice in it to keep it cold,
mm-hmm.
and ice keeps ice cold. So there's a lot of new tricks I'm learning being out there, and you get taught that on the tour. You know, tricks like the more ice, the better. It'll get less watery, whereas most people think, oh, if you put too much ice in, it's going to water it down.
Yes,
it's actually the complete opposite. Ice keeps ice cold, which is suppose something
that's a great way of putting it, actually.
You don't think about it until someone tells you.
Yeah,
like,
one or two ice cubes, of course, they're going to melt, but if you put in a dozen, they won't so much.
Well, that's it. Although it's quite warm out there today, but it's fantastic.
And there's a lot of distilleries popping up all over the place. Yeah. This first one in Kilkenny. But I think for Ireland, when you think of drinks, Irish whiskey, it is kind of like, we spell it correctly. The Scots don't. They leave out the E. We were famous for it for a long time. So it is great to see so many distilleries popping up.
Yeah, and the first written, anything written about whiskey is actually in the Red Book of Ossory, which is in Kilkenny. Well,
that's
Kilkenny
right.
And the surrounding areas,
the
Ossory, which is fantastic. It's up in Dublin at the moment, and we're pushing Grace in the museum to get the Red Book down to us. But, you know, with the Whiskey Guild in Kilkenny, and now the written from the Red Book of Ossory, it really is part of our culture, and if it's something that we should be proud of, and you know, to bring back how it was done and bring back the farm element into it, and it's really unique to the region, which is fantastic. And I'm really excited for 2020.
That's brilliant.
Fast forward a few years.
Yeah. And people are obviously enjoying the tours, because I saw during the week that it's the number one distillery tour in Ireland on TripAdvisor.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, especially working in tourism for so many years. To the distillery tour, most people come out to it. It's hard to get them to leave it, which is quite nice, and I think that's what's unique. You're meeting family on site, you're learning about history as well as getting really good drinks on the way. But it's the distillery tour is number one distillery tour in Ireland on TripAdvisor, which is very like TripAdvisor is great sometimes.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I hate it. But anyway, that's beside the point.
But everyone hates it, but everyone checks it.
Yeah, it's true.
You know,
true. And you can't help it. If you do a search for like a distillery tour in Ireland, TripAdvisor, the results will pop up, yeah.
And what's quite good is for us, we're very small. There's three of us out in the office, and Morgan and the family. And it's a very good way of getting our name out there for people coming looking for distilleries in Ireland. But we'd love the people of Kilkenny to come out and visit us, because we're there just over a year. And, you know, it's always, I travel a lot of the world, and when it's on your own doorstep, it's harder to do.
But we don't often appreciate it when it's very, very close. It is funny. So we should, people from the city should pop out. Ballykeith is what? How far outside of town? How long would it take you to drive out?
It's about, I better say 15 minutes. Yeah. I'm a bit fast sometimes. It's about 15 minute drive.
20
it's
minutes on your way
quite
back.
Quite close to the amphitheatre. So that's kind of a lot of people. The amphitheatre has been great this year with the weather. So a lot of people have been out. So we're very close to the amphitheatre.
So we'd recommend to everybody from Kilkenny that they pop out to Ballykeith and check out the website, ballykeithdistillery.ie. So ballykeithdistillery.ie, and you're on Facebook and Twitter as well.
Instagram and all the rest.
So Ireland's only on-farm distillery, and just a couple of years old, and another couple of years to go before the whiskey is ready, but the gin is there now, and so is the poaching. Thanks a million for coming into us and telling us the story, Carmel, and continued success to all out in Ballykeith.
Thank you so much.
Now, we're going to ask one question.
One question, quickly.
So where's the gin for sale, you know, retail-wise?
At the moment, the wine centre.
Okay.
And it'll probably pop up in a lot more shops in Kilkenny in the next few days, weeks, and a lot of the bars have come on board with us the last couple of weeks, so they have our signature drinks in there, so make sure to ask them.
A very distinctive logo with the kind of horse and cart on the label, so it's really attractive. And I'd love to tell people what it tastes like, but we didn't get to sample any. We'll have an ad break, and during the ad break then I'll give out to you some more about not bringing in any alcohol. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes just after these. Text us on 086-353-7782.
Hello, I am John Flynn, and here are some gems. Grow chives, garlic or lavender among roses to keep aphids away.
And you're welcome back to The Kitchen Garden, and I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm joined by Mags Morrissey. Another lovely tip there from Canon Flynn out in Kells on... We might talk a bit more about aphids actually in the garden. I have a story to tell if you remind me. But right now we're stone cold sober, and we're going to be joined on the line by Claire O'Connell of the Gas Lamp Gallery in Goree in County Wexford, because a culture's food probably expresses its beliefs and its values and wealth more than anything else. And in art, food helps to convey the status or aspirations of a particular time and its zeitgeist. So when we look from some of the old world still lives all the way up to some of the classics of pop art, we see food coming across as a kind of a common image. And it seems to always have been the case, because even the Greeks and the Romans were at it, and most of their artwork features food as well. So I hope we're joined on the line now by Claire. Claire, can you hear me?
I can indeed. Hi, thanks so much for inviting me on.
No,
can I just say I'm dying for gin and tonic.
We all are, Claire.
Yeah.
And we didn't get any that time. I can't believe it.
No, I think I'm going to go into the off-license now.
Well, see if they have any of Ballykeith's.
I'm going to.
Yeah, do, do.
Yeah.
A great success out there. It's a huge investment. We didn't really talk to Carmel about the investment and stuff like that, but when you consider the return on it, it's going to take a long time to grow, and you're going to be sitting on your whiskey for a very long time. It's very, very
absolutely,
big commitment.
But it could be all, if a bit like art.
Yes.
Invest, and then, you know, it pays off over time.
And indeed, it's the art world, I believe, is huge amounts of money going into investments in art.
Yes,
at the moment.
It is after the, you know, the decline and after the recession, it is starting to pick up again, and we can see a demand more and more now for original work. But the one thing that we do notice, particularly here, where, you know, Goree is a thriving rural town, but we do notice that people want art in particular that's going to make them smile and make them happy.
Mm.
And so our top sellers would be flowers, wildflower, you know, which wonderful, because paintings of wildflowers are completely in line with, you know, hosepipe restrictions, don't need watering. and art that makes you smile. I'm looking at a piece at the moment here of five dogs sitting at a table having a cup of tea and some jam biscuits, and a picture of some cats having some little fish cake. And that is what people love. They love things that they can relate to and that are affordable, and that is what we're about here. But in particularly flowers, gardens and agriculture, we're in such, Kilkenny also, such an agricultural area. We are often asked for, you know, paintings of cows, sheep, you know, anything to do with agriculture always sells well.
We do see a lot on social media that there's nothing like putting up a post of one of the animals out at Crowan Cottages to get the best response. People love to look at the pictures of the animals, and I'm sure that translates into paintings as well.
Absolutely. Anything that makes people smile. And personally, myself, you know, the summer has been fantastic and we're all spending as little time as possible in our houses, and we're out in our gardens or down, you know, in our case here, just on the beach. But in the winter, and our winter is so long and it's dark and grey, that's when the art on your wall comes to life, because you're actually in your house and you're noticing, and you need something to lift from that never-ending grey. Mm-hmm. And that, like, any customer that walks in here to the gallery, just we're just full of colour and life. There's an absolutely beautiful painting here beside me at the moment of rapeseed fields in Wexford, which I'm not so sure, you know, how much there is of it in Kilkenny, but here, the fields, if you go out into any of the countryside areas, the fields are just pure yellow. It's beautiful.
It is a beautiful addition to the kind of scenery. And I've seen a couple of months ago when they would have been in flower, I saw tourists pulled in at the side of the road taking photographs of these fields
of
yellow.
Yeah, it's amazing. It looks stunning. It really does. But that is what it's about. Whether it's, it has to be at a, you know, a still life of a jug with some lemons, or be it a print of, you know, say the water lilies by Claude Monet. People want something that's going to make them smile and, you know, lift their day and lift their world.
Now, speaking of Monet and the famous artist, we hear results in the papers or on the news all the time about new records being set for, like, works by the masters being sold. And it really is investment kind of stakes at this stage. It's not like somebody's going to take this and stick it on the wall of their holiday house down in Wexford. For those high-end paintings, it's going into a vault somewhere to be sold at some point in the future for a profit, they would hope. I'm sure that has an effect, though. Those stories of people buying art and how art is becoming a big investment, I'm sure that must filter down to the smaller artists as well.
It definitely does. You know, obviously, the water lilies back in 2012 sold for $43 million.
Wow.
That's not really going to filter down to the Gaslamp Gallery. But you know, we do have, we definitely have customers who are looking for people, some of our artists who, you know, their work is increasing over time, and it a lot, like, there was one of our artists, I think 6-7 years ago, started his career selling one piece a week on eBay. He went on to win so many awards. His work now hangs in Oras on Uachtaráin, it hangs in the Dáil, and now next week he's having a solo exhibition here.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, that's a real success, and that is where you can see price increases and people are actually taking note and going, oh, you know what, I might treat myself to one of those. And it does, it makes a difference.
And of all of the topics that are, of all of the themes that you might see in some of the artworks, can you see ones that people might have a particular preference for? So you say people like paintings that make them smile, and we should always buy art that we love, not just for an investment to stick on the wall. But do you see a kind of theme that is more popular than others?
Flowers. People still love flowers. They sell all year round, whether it's roses, poppies, hugely so, wildflower meadows, gardens. At the most beautiful one here, I'm just looking at the moment, of a wild English garden, actually, and it's just stunning. It's just about bringing the outside in, which, you know, is so important, because we get so little time. Our season is so short, our summer is so short, and this year we seem to spring straight from winter bang into summer.
We did,
No spring. And, you know, now before we know it, we're going to be back into autumn again.
Yeah, well, I have
a
painting.
Sorry, I don't mean
No, but I can see what you mean though about those, and some of the pictures I've seen you put up on Twitter of those beautiful kind of English gardens and all of the brightly coloured flowers, absolutely stunning. But I have a picture, as you mentioned, autumn. I have a picture, a painting on my wall myself at home that has all of those autumnal colours in it. And you know, I can't remember the last time I looked at that painting. I'm sure it's my body refusing to acknowledge that autumn is coming.
Could be. There are those of us who adore autumn, so for me it's all about autumn. I love it, but there are other people that dread the changing of the season.
I'm not a big fan.
And want sunshine all year round on their walls. But maybe you should change that painting. Maybe it's time to change it.
Maybe I might take a trip down to the Gas Lamp Gallery in Gorey and have a look at some of the stuff you have down there.
Now, you mentioned
you had a launch coming up on the 11th, is it?
We do. This is Kevin Roach's exhibition called Take the Sky Road, which is fabulous. Because what he has done is he has worked his way all around the coast of Ireland. So every single painting in the exhibition is some part of the coast of Ireland. Now, poor Kilkenny doesn't have any coastline. Or not that I know of anyway. My geography is not that great. But so this is, you know, it's beautiful. We all love the sea. We love the ocean. So this incorporates loads of places all along the Wild Atlantic Way, right down from Kerry up to Mayo and then down the east coast, and especially kind of around the Hookhead area, which has great affection here. Kevin is, he works in oils, but he works, he's a modern twist on oils. It's paintings are full of contrast, bold colors, dramatic light, and everything from, you know, bare canvas to rich impasto with. And he does really, really thick palette knife strokes, and they are his speciality. So some of his paintings actually are sculpture-like. So it's going to be, as always, we roll out the red carpet for our opening night. We're going to have a lovely, the Leinster under-13 champion harpist playing outside on the evening, Molly Carroll. She's an amazingly talented young harpist, so she'll be opening. We'll have the red carpet, and there'll be a lot of red wine and white wine and Prosecco if anybody'd like to come along.
Well, that sounds very tempting. I think it might make my first visit over to the Gas Lamp Gallery on the 11th of August for that. But in the meantime, thanks a million, Claire, for joining us today.
Thanks so much for the invitation. It's my first time ever on a garden show, you know, so I hope your listeners haven't turned off.
Well, there's some of those pictures that we were talking about are available, or that you can see on thegaslampgallery.com and on the Gas Lamp Gallery on Facebook and on Twitter. And I recommend that you follow Claire and the rest of the team in the gallery on those medias, because they post some beautiful, beautiful pictures and there's some beautiful artwork there. So thanks a million again, Claire, for joining us on the show. Now, I saw some of those pictures, and I'd be really tempted to go down and bite. The one of the English garden is just stunning. If you were able to get, that's what I love about art. A friend of mine, Kathy, used to do, remember those aerial paintings of farms that you'd get?
Oh, yeah, yeah, and the photography.
The photography would come along. The photographer would fly past and take a photograph. Yes, absolutely massive. But there was always a car parked badly, or the shopping was on, or the washing was on the line, or there was an old tractor around the back or something. Well, Kathy had a brilliant idea of painting that kind of view of the place, and then it could be absolutely ideal. And similarly with some of the paintings I've seen Claire put up on Twitter, the English garden or the wildflower meadow, absolutely perfect. And it could be on your wall, and instead of looking out the window at the mess that's in the garden, you could look at the wall.
Just look at the wall.
Now, in Nature Notes this week, you wanted to talk to us about swans.
Yeah, swans. I don't know how I just became inspired to talk about swans today. We kind of take them for granted. You know, they're kind of everywhere, aren't they?
And they're huge birds.
Yeah,
huge.
They are. Yeah. Three species in Ireland. Well, I suppose you could say four. There's the odd black swan that was introduced a long time ago and that's kind of has become a resident now. You don't see them very often. But the mute swans are the ones that you see all year round. And then we've Hooper swans and Bewick swans that come in for the winter. Lots of Hooper swans. They look a little bit like the Bewick swans, but generally, if you see one and you're wondering which it is, it's probably a Hooper swan, because about 15,000 of those, as opposed to less than 100 of the Hooper swans now. Their numbers have dropped dramatically.
100?
Yeah, less than 100 that come here in the winter.
So I'm
not sure why, actually. There's good numbers of the Hooper swans, and they come all the way from Iceland. They leave again in April of every year, where the Bewicks come from Siberia. So whether they have pressures back at home or generally birds like that, you know, they're breeding in Siberia. So if they have pressures there, there's going to be fewer that get here.
Yeah.
So it's more the if they have a successful breeding season, they'll tend to survive their other part of the year wherever they are. Right. But the mute swans, which we see, you know, floating around in our lakes and rivers and everywhere, they're a beautiful bird, really. And do you know what a female mute swan is called? I like asking you questions.
I don't actually, no.
Pen.
I was going to say some joke about a female and being mute and it being unusual, but I wouldn't do that because that would be a terribly sexist
thing. So I'll just pretend you did. So pens and cobs are what they're called. And there's an old saying, if you wanted monogamy, marry a swan.
Oh, yeah, I have heard that they mate for life, don't they?
Yeah, but there's only apparently about a 3% divorce rate, which is quite low, I suppose. But they generally do find a mate and stay with it. And they, for the first year when they get together, they might not lay or make a nest and stuff, but they'll kind of keep a territory and they'll start maybe building a nest. And they'll kind of, they call it the honeymoon time, so they kind of hang out together for a year before they'll actually get down to business. The males will defend their territory, you know, and they can be quite aggressive to others and to people or to anything that goes near them. You've seen them like attacking a canoe and that sort of thing. So they can be. The females must reach a weight. They must be of a good size and stuff before they'll actually start to breed. So they'll start their nesting and all of that. So sometimes it takes them then a little bit of time after that to get their weight back up, because they've spent so much time kind of working hard to make their nest. But once they've reached their weight and stuff, they'll have a nest. I mean, you've seen the nests and stuff.
Big nests
and stuff. Huge, very just ramshackled, really, and stuff. And sometimes they can be like almost floating, which can be a problem for them later and stuff, because every now and then, like, a nest will just get washed away if there's awful floods or something. So, but both the cobs and the hens will build a nest together, and they build a new one every year, which a lot of work obviously goes into it, because they can be kind of like 2 or 3 feet high, and maybe same width. So, and then she'll start laying eggs, and she'll kind of lay 2 day intervals, up to kind of varies and stuff, but maybe 7 or 9 eggs. And during that time, if the pen wants to go off and feed, the cob will sit and mind the eggs and mind the nest and stuff. But once she's actually incubating, she'll stay. And it takes 35 days, so she'll sit there for most of the 35 days.
They're big birds, so it's not kind of surprising it takes that long.
No. So I assume the eggs are enormous and stuff. They'd be, you know, they are in the kind of goose family and stuff, but they're quite a lot bigger than the goose. And while she's on her nest and stuff, then the cob will protect and fight off predators and stuff. There's a couple of interesting things, I suppose. When they'll keep the chicks on the nest for a day or two and stuff, and then they'll take them off into the water, and they don't feed them and stuff. They'll just bring them somewhere suitable and they'll just let them watch, like all birds do and stuff. And but then when they, you know, they're grey, the cygnets are grey and stuff, and they're fluffy and they're gorgeous, and then they start to grow and they get kind of browny colour. And then once they become white, the male, the cob, has a kind of an aversion to other white birds. So once they become white, they're old enough to leave. So he will kind of like
drive
them away once they turn that colour. Wow. And they have to go and find their own territory then.
But I suppose how many of them can pack into one space depends on the amount of food available. Because along the rivers in Kilkenny, you'll see a pair of swans and maybe some cygnets with them. And then you'd have to go a long distance before you come across another one. But in Dublin, along the canals, there's one stretch of canal there coming down towards Bagot Street or Leeson Street.
Portobello,
there's dozens and dozens of swans.
Yeah, that's true. Now, they're probably like fed artificially there. But generally in those situations and stuff, they'll have smaller broods.
Oh.
They lay a little bit differently when they don't have such a nice habitat, I suppose. There are a lot actually.
I suppose nutritionally, they're probably getting an awful lot of bread off people.
Which people should never feed bread to swans or ducks or geese or anything.
They don't get much from it. We were just eating
rice. It's really bad for them actually, if way too much just gluten in their stomachs. They're not used to it, or they're not able to digest it. If you want to give them something, give them grains or cereals or even grapes or something.
But they're a magnificent bird. And I paddled a Grand Canal from Dublin over to the River Shannon years ago, and it was the closest I ever came to swans, because along the canal, when they were taking off, they're So dramatic. They try to run and flap at the same time.
And they're putting loads
everywhere.
Of effort into it.
Huge effort into it. For these graceful creatures then, that as they swim around on the water, it looks so effortless.
Yes.
But the wings make an incredible noise as they fly over you. It's an amazing noise.
Quite a few of them get killed by flying. You know, when they go off, the young ones are when they're reared and stuff, and they go to find new territory and that, they get killed by crashing into cables overhead, wires and cables and stuff, which is very unfortunate, really.
Sometimes see in the city in Dublin as well, when they're flying and they're taking off from the canal, most of the canals have bridges at intervals, and they'll just get to the bridge as they take off, and if a bus passes. But beautiful creatures, get out and have a look at them. And the cygnets will be swimming behind Mammy now at a good size.
The cygnets are quite big now,
actually.
When they're small and stuff, if there's a threat or anything, they'll climb up on her back and stuff. And you know that lovely picture of them all kind of huddled, sitting in the back and the wings up and stuff is quite special.
Yeah, it's a beautiful shape. Yeah. But they're a bit big for that now, I'd
say.
They
are too big for that now, yeah. They should be at the grey stage, you know, the grey going into brown stage now.
Well, get out this weekend while you have a chance and go for a walk and check out the swans and other things as you're out and about. Now, we better talk to people. I know it's the height of summer and we were encouraging people to kind of sit back and enjoy the garden, but there are some things that people should be doing in the garden now. But earlier on, when we were eating the plums, you asked me about this little tiny maggot that was inside the plum, and can you see the little brown dots that are beside it as well? So what we're looking at there is the larvae of the plum fruit moth, and while I've no problem with the little larvae itself, depending on how long it's been in there, those little brown spots are from the moth. So they're its excretion, shall we say.
Nice, thanks for giving that to me and telling me about that afterwards.
That's what would kind of put me off. Now, there's two main pests of plums. There's the plum fruit moth, which we have here, which is a tiny, tiny little kind of caterpillar type thing, about 6-7 millimetres long, less than a millimetre wide. So it's a tiny little thing. It becomes a moth later on in the year, and then they lay their eggs, which overwinter on the buds, and then they develop early on in the season and kind of crawl inside the plants. The only way to deal with them really is to put up pheromone traps. So next year I may, now that there's a bit of an infestation, I'll check some more of the fruits and I may put up some pheromone traps, and that will catch the female and prevent her kind of laying the eggs. Completely harmless to any other insect, so it doesn't have too much of an effect on them. There is another pest for the plum, and that's the plum sawfly. And that guy, they spend more time on the ground and under the ground, but they do like to crawl up the tree and eat their way through some of the plums while they're growing before going back to the ground again. So those you tend not to find in the fruit, but you will find little holes through the fruit.
Through the fruit,
then, of course, the wasp gets attracted to, the fruit.
And it's not appetizing. Like,
it's not. It's
eaten a lot of leaves from the garden with holes through it. Stuff probably too many.
It would put you off a little bit.
I wouldn't mind eating it, but you wouldn't really serve it to somebody. She wouldn't.
So anyway, that's all for the jobs for the garden this week. Get out and have a look at your fruit, enjoy what's in the garden, and enjoy spending your time out there. And remember, you can keep in touch with us during the week on Twitter at NesbitF for me, or at Mags Morrissey for Mags, or you can email us at any stage kitchengarden@crkc.ie. and you can listen to a podcast of this or any of the other shows by visiting thekitchengarden.ie. we'll be back on Community Radio Kilkenny City at the same time next week.